Om Agnitaminandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Saksuru Samritam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Pakadamayam Dadati Sapanantikam Vanchakaputu Vyascha Kripasindu Vaivacha Titanam Babini Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Nama. Prithu Maharaj, after ruling for so many years, became old, and then wishing to prepare himself for his death, for the death of the body, because whether we like it or not, this body is going to die. Of course, we don't like it. But yet, regardless of that, and even if we do want, even if we do think it's a wonderful thing that our body is going to die, it's still going to die. This is the law of nature. There is no freedom involved in this. So Prithu Maharaj, understanding that and understanding the principle that one's consciousness, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajan yante kalevam tam tam avanti kanteya saritat bhava parata. One's consciousness at the time when one dies, the soul is eternal and the soul is covered by what is called a subtle body. Sukshma Surya, a subtle body composed of the mind, the intelligence, the subtle part of us. When we look in the mirror, we see us, one aspect of us, the gross body, the gross aspect of us. But that isn't us, exactly. There's so much more to ourselves, because at the moment of death, after the soul leaves the body, along with the mind and intelligence, etc., along with the subtle body, the gross body is still there, but everyone knows that the person has died. Everyone knows that the person who we love is no longer present. And therefore people cry. So we are more than the body. Ultimately, so we are the body on one level, that's certainly us at this point, but it's only temporarily us, because we've had so many bodies, a cycle of bodies. This is the body the soul happens to inhabit now. And the soul, the eternal soul, has a subtle body as well, and based on that subtle body at the time of death, what it is filled with, what its desires are, that will dictate his acceptance of another, of a gross body. And the consciousness that he has will be expressed through that particular gross body. So, Maharaj Prithu, after ruling the world for so many years, when he understood he was getting old, he decided to prepare his mentality. Because the soul doesn't get old, the mind doesn't get old, but the body gets old. So death is approaching. So he decided to make sure that his next body was going to be a spiritual body. He was going to go to the spiritual world by going to the forest, developing material detachment, and always focusing his mind upon Krishna. And by that process of focusing his mind on Krishna, and he practiced Astanga Yoga, he purified his consciousness. And then finally, by his own will, he gave up the body, his gross body. So he was there in the forest with his wife, and his wife was taking care of him and performing austerities herself. Her name was Archie. So she was such a wonderful wife and a wonderful queen that text 19 explains. The queen, the wife of Prithu Maharaj, whose name was Archie, followed her husband into the forest. Since she was a queen, her body was very delicate because she didn't have to scrub the pots or water the garden or weed the garden or work every day because she had so many assistants. She was the queen. So her body was very delicate. Although she did not deserve to live in the forest because living in the forest is so austere and difficult, still she voluntarily touched her lotus feet to the ground, which means that practically speaking, she never went outside the palace previously. And therefore her feet, which were very soft and tender because she never went outside the palace, never actually touched the ground, practically speaking. So when her husband went to the forest to perform austerities, being a faithful wife, she went with him. And she also performed austerities. This is the Vedic system. That the husband and wife stayed together. Not, as Prabhupada will explain in a later purport, not divorce, separation, then get married to someone else and then have some children and then separate again and then get married to someone else and then have some children or don't have some children and then separate it again. And then marry the first wife again, and then after some time separate again, and then marry the third wife, and then marry someone new, and then separate. On and on and on and on and on and on. There's actually a surprising number of people, men who end up remarrying one of the wives that they previously divorced. Surprising number. So anyway, this is not the Vedic system. The Vedic system is that there is marriage and there is no divorce. So the wife, Archie, was very chaste and very devoted to her husband. And she went into the forest with him to perform austerities because she understood that she too was going to die. And therefore she too needed to purify her consciousness. What does purify the consciousness mean? It means that every single thing that we are attached to in the material world, the good, the bad, and the... Yes, everything, as well as the good, the beautiful, and the ugly. Everything is a contamination. All material attachments, anything that we're attached to in the material world, whether it's something very, very wonderful or something very nasty, it's all a contamination and unnatural for the eternal soul whose natural consciousness is to be attached only on the spiritual level to Krishna. That is the natural, unadulterated consciousness of the soul of each and every one of us. So living in a palace or living in a flat or living in a room or living in a hole like an animal, still we get attached. This is one of the most amazing things, is that whatever situation we're in, we become attached to that situation. It begins to feel just like home after some time. But yet, we must be kicked out of that home by the forces of time. So therefore, Archie understood her situation was just the same. As her husband was getting old and as he had gotten material attachments, because to live in this world means to te dvanva, moha vinimuktam. To live in this world means to have a certain set of things that we think are wonderful and we're trying to bring closer to us, and a certain set of things that we think are horrible and we're trying to push away from us. And according to our body and our social situation, etc., a certain thing will be attractive and another thing will be repulsive. And an amazing thing about the mind is that something that we're attracted to one minute, we can be repulsed by the very next minute. This is the nature of the mind. So all the attractions and the repulsions in the material world are just artificial coverings, layers, contaminants upon our natural, eternal, spiritual consciousness of love for Krishna. So Archie had gone to the forest as well to perform austerities. We heard about the austerities that Prithu Maharaj and Archie had performed, their eating, their tolerance to the cold and to the heat. And now Prithu Maharaj had died. And the queen, who previously wasn't used to austerities at all, now her husband had left his body. Although she was not accustomed to such difficulties, Queen Archie followed her husband in the regulative principles of living in the forest like great sages. He had laid down on the ground, and she, without any bed or covering, quilts or anything like that, she also lay down on the ground and ate only fruits, flowers, and leaves. And because she was not fit for these activities, she had been brought up in the luxurious life of the queen. But she performed austerities and her body became frail and thin. Yet, because of the pleasure she derived in serving her husband, she did not feel any difficulties. This is the nature of love. One wants to do it. It's not a matter of force. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The words bhakti vratta dharma nishtaya indicate that a woman's duty or religious principle is to serve a husband in all conditions. In Vedic civilization, a man is taught from the beginning of his life to become a brahmachari, then an ideal grihastha, then vanaprastha, then sannyasi. So he's taught to live in a particular way, to be detached, then to get married, then to get detached, and then fully renounced. And the wife, what is the wife taught? The wife is taught just to follow the husband strictly in all conditions of life. After the period of brahmacharya, the student life of the man, a man accepts a householder's life. And the woman is also taught by her parents to be a chaste wife. Thus, when a boy and girl, a girl and boy are united, married, both are trained for a life dedicated to a higher purpose. The boy is trained to execute his duty in accordance with the higher purpose of life, and the girl is trained to follow him. So here, inherently, is the basic difference between contemporary civilization and the Vedic civilization. And the Vedic civilization was based on the knowledge that we are eternal, that we are souls, and the body is temporary, and nothing can really be gained on the material or gross level in this life. Yes, things can be gained, but all that is gained will cause pain. There's that saying that is popular now, no pain, no gain. But anything gained causes pain. That's actually more accurate when it comes to material things. Because as soon as we gain something material, what happens? We become attached to it. And we must lose it. So losing something that one is attached to is one of the great definitions of a painful situation. It's the attachment to something that causes pain. So the Vedic civilization teaches that one should live one's life in stages according to one's age and disposition, mentality. Different things are prescribed, but the ultimate goal is by the time that we are elderly, one should have very minimal or no material attachments, and on the other hand, one should have great spiritual wisdom. So one's life is calibrated in such a way, scientifically, that one, by the end of one's life, will be materially detached and spiritually attached. No contaminations, just pure consciousness. And one goes through stages in that way. So in contemporary civilization, this isn't taught at all, but rather, what is the goal? Just to accumulate more and more power, pleasures, objects of pleasure, goods, consume, consume, consume. And the result is very, very disappointment, great disappointment when one is old, and because one's body starts failing one, and no matter how many times we replace our hip, get artificial hips, and how much makeup and stretching of skin is done, still the body is going to die. So what a frustrating situation. And then, according to how one lives this life, his next life will be so dictated by what he's attached to and what he's done. So this knowledge doesn't exist in contemporary civilization, and we are not brought up with this knowledge. So, in the Vedic system, marriage had a particular purpose too, not just unrestricted sex life and changing of partners. There was duties to perform. Everyone had a role to play. The wife followed the husband, and the husband didn't exploit the wife. They worked together as a team, and the husband's duty was specifically to become very advanced spiritually by performing his duties, and the wife would serve him, and together they would act practically as one. Now, just as no one knows, there's no such thing as duty, and then as soon as there's some difficulties, there's divorce. And the contemporary solution to the fact that in the last generation there was so much divorce because the morality has changed so much. There was so much divorce in the last generation. So this generation, the children don't even want to get married. Rather, they want to try each other out for some time, and then, if they're compatible, then get married. That's the concept. But actually, statistics show that causes even more divorce. Statistically, it causes more trouble. The theory is all it'll solve the problem of divorce, but actually, it doesn't at all. It causes more divorce, more difficulties. So this old-fashioned, politically incorrect Vedic system actually works. And the new fashionable flavor of the month theory, regardless of how appealing they may be, practically speaking, they don't work. So the boy is trained to execute his duty in accordance with the higher purpose of life. He knows that the purpose of life is spiritual, even though I have material desires, even though I will do so many things on the material level. But ultimately, what is to be gained from human life is not something that will be snatched away by time, but what is to be gained is something eternal. So the boy has that in his mind in the marriage, and the girl is trained to follow him. The chaste wife's duty is to keep her husband pleased in household life in all respects, so that he doesn't long to if he's satisfied at home, then he won't be longing to get divorced and remarriage and leave this one and get another one. So when the husband retires from family life, she is to go to the forest and adopt the life of a vanaprastha or a vanavasi. Vanavasi just means one who is living in the forest. At that time, the wife is to follow her husband and take care of him just as she took care of him in householder life. But when the husband takes the renounced order of life, namely sannyas, the wife is to return home and become a saintly woman, setting an example for her children and daughters-in-law and showing them how to live a life of austerity. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, his wife Vishnupriya Devi, although only 16 years old, also took the vow of austerity due to her husband's leaving home. She chanted on her beads, and after finishing one round, she collected one grain of rice. In this way, as many rounds as she chanted, she would receive the same number of rice grains and then cook them and so take prasad. Now, that isn't very many. So if she chanted, say, 24 hours a day, that would almost say, how many grains of rice, how many rounds is that? That's little, yeah. How many rounds can one chant a day? Like 200 or something like that, or less, but say 200. So that's 200 grains of rice. 200 grains of rice. Sasa? A little? Yes? No? It is so much. Okay, but don't do that yet, okay? The principle is austerity. And of course, no one can imitate this. This is called austerity. In other words, what does austerity mean? It means giving up the temporary pleasures to gain the eternal. Austerity is something that is not in fashion, in vogue. Rather, the opposite is popular. No austerity, just comfort, creature comforts or something. But austerity means to give up the temporary, but not for its own sake, to flagellate the body or something like that, or to cause oneself difficulty. That's not proper austerity. But what it means is to give up temporary things for that which will impede our progress towards the eternal, and to develop the taste for the spiritual pleasures. That is austerity. Prabhupada continues, even today in India, widows or women whose husbands have taken sannyas follow the principles of austerity, even though they live with their children. So Preetam Raja's wife, Archie, was steadily determined to execute the duties of a wife. And while her husband was in the forest, she followed him in eating only fruits and leaves and lying down on the ground. Since a woman's body is considerably more delicate than a man's, Queen Archie became very frail and thin, parikarshita. When one engages in austerities, his bodily generally becomes lean and thin. Becoming fat is not a very good qualification in spiritual life, because a person who is engaged in spiritual life must reduce the comforts of the body, namely eating, sleeping, and mating, to a minimum. What is minimum for one person is not necessarily minimum for another. So it is individualized. But yet, the principle of minimizing or simplifying one's material needs and maximizing so that time and inclination doesn't develop in the material side, and time is used instead of using all our time to earn money, etc., and to gain power, to enjoy and facilities to enjoy the material world. Once time is used to cultivate spiritual taste and spiritual advancement. Dhaman Bhagavatani Hat. Komara Macharet Pragyo Dhaman Bhagavatami Hat. This is what is to be gained. This is actually what can be and should be gained by the opportunity afforded by having a human body, having the intelligence, the discriminatory intelligence of a human. Human life is not meant to act like animal, just engage in the animal. Tendency. We have animal tendencies, but also we have more capacity for spiritual. So when one engages in austerity, his body becomes lean and thin. Becoming fat is not a very good qualification in spiritual life. Although Queen Archie became very thin from living in the forest, according to regulative principles, she was not unhappy. It wasn't artificial for her. She was not unhappy. She wasn't thinking, why has he brought me to the forest? I don't have any servants here. There's nothing to eat. Grumble, grumble, gripe, gripe, grouch, grouch. She wasn't thinking like that. For she was, contrarily, she was happy because she was enjoying the honor of serving her great husband. Her husband was truly a great soul, and she was a powerful follower of a great soul. So she was also great. When Queen Archie, but that husband, by his own power, had left his body, he had died. When she saw that her husband, who had been so merciful to her and the earth, no longer showed any symptoms of life, she lamented for a while and then built a fiery pyre on top of a hill and placed the body of her husband on it. Purport. After seeing all the life symptoms in her husband stop, the queen lamented for a while. The word kinship means for a little while. Because naturally she loved her husband and now he had gone. The queen was completely aware that her husband was not dead. What? She was going to burn the body and he wasn't dead? Although the symptoms of life, action, intelligence, and sense perception had ceased, how was he not dead? As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 2.13, Dehenasmin yata dehe komaram jovanam jara tata dehantara praptiya dhiras. What does dhiras tatra namuyate mean? Huh? Dhiras means what? Dhira. Tatra namuyate. Namuyate. A sober person is not bewildered when the soul, when the body changes from boyhood to youth to old age, and then finally when the soul leaves the body, the person doesn't think, oh, the person has gotten old. A spiritually advanced person doesn't identify the soul with the body and doesn't think, oh, the person has gotten old or the person is now dead. No, the life within the body, the soul is eternal. It's just gone somewhere else. Just as it has changed from a boyhood body to a youth, a body full of youth, and then a body that is old and decrepit, the soul has remained the same. It is eternal. As the embodied soul continuously passes, the Bhagavad Gita verse says, in this body, from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. When a living entity, Prabhupada continues, transfers from one body to another, a process generally known as death, a sane man does not lament. For he knows that the living entity, the soul, is not dead, but is simply transferred from one body to another. The queen should have been afraid of being alone in the forest with the body of her husband. But since she was a great wife of a great personality, she lamented for a while, but immediately understood that she had many duties to perform. Thus, instead of wasting her time in lamentation, this is the instruction of the Bhagavad Gita. Because after this verse is recited, Dehenosmin Yata Dehe, explaining that the soul is the person, the body isn't the person, it's the soul that's the person. Then one said, yes, but all I know is the body and I'm attached to the body of someone. And then the answer to that, the Krishna gives, Matra Spashasta Kanteya Sitosna Sukadukadaha Agama Payano Anityas Tamasta Tikshasubharata. That one must be very tolerant in dealing with this always changing material world, where the people that we love, they die, we're separated from them. The people that we don't like, they come close to us. this happens, we like a situation, it changes, we don't like a situation, it comes, it goes, it comes, it goes. It's enough to drive everyone crazy, which is basically what it does. Finally work so hard to get into a good situation, thinking that that will be stable, and it doesn't remain stable, something always happens, and then you think, well, only if this occurs, then that satisfaction that has eluded me will be there. So one must learn to be fixed. And this is what the platform of nishta or fixedness is, that one acts properly regardless, he does the right thing regardless of whether what he feels like. Because the fluctuations of the mind, they come and they go up and they down, they change. But when one is fixed on the strong platform of realization, it is not that the fluctuations of the mind disappear, but one remains fixed in the correct understanding, the correct activity, understanding and activity, regardless of what the mind is demanding. So yes, she was attached to her husband. Yes, it was very painful for her. But yes, she lamented, but practically she tolerated it. And she lamented only for a short time. Not that she had no affection for him. Of course she had so much affection. And respect and love. But she knew that she had a duty to do. And what was that duty? Instead of wasting her time in lamentation, she immediately prepared a fiery pyre on top of a hill, and then placed the body of her husband on it to be burned. This is another aspect of the Vedic system. The body is not given the importance it is. Even in the Bible, that famous statement where, who was it? Someone was burying there. Someone's relative had just died, and Jesus said, "Let the dead bury the dead. You come with me. You're alive. This is life. There is no more life in that body. The life is gone. What is the use of decorating it? The body is, the life has gone from the body. This is stark reality. It is not sentimental. So instead of sentiment is okay, sentiment is natural, but sentimental means more sentiment than is actually appropriate. That's what sentimental means. So therefore, Krishna told Arjuna, pragyavadam jabasatsegi, gatasam agatasam shlananasochantipandita. The wise person neither laments for the living nor the dead. Soul, the life, that's important. So she, just imagine how painful that is on one level when we're sentimental, we're so attached to the body, just imagine what it would be like to burn the body of someone that one loves in that way. How fixed in knowledge one will have to be. And on the other side, the person being burned, he's actually gone. He's left that body. He's left that body. So she took that body and prepared a funeral pyre. After this, the queen executed the necessary funerary functions. She performed the funeral functions and offered waters, oblations of water. After bathing in the river herself, she offered obeisances to various demigods situated in the sky and the different planetary systems. She then circumambulated the fire, and while thinking of the lotus feet of her husband, who was, she herself entered the flames. So this system is currently, it still goes on sometimes, but not, because no one has the depth of realization to be able to do it in the right consciousness. Prabhupada, whenever he'll mention this practice, which is called sati, which literally means chaste, when the wife follows the husband, he mentions that it, the British in India, they banned this system because people were forced to do this, which was such a horrible thing. But when there's a pure and realized wife whose consciousness, she's fixed on the fact that she's not her body, and her husband is exalted and going to the spiritual world due to his exalted consciousness, by entering the fire along with her husband, she goes to the spiritual world along with her husband. So this is very wonderful. Just like the warriors in ancient times. And usually I can't remember his name, but there was one famous general, he was an American, who understood, he was a World War II, maybe it was Marshall or Patton, yes, it was Patton. Huh? General Patton, he was really powerful. And he fully understood, he actually realized reincarnation. We hear about it and we philosophize about it and we trying to understand it and accept it and live by it. But he actually realized it and he understood that he was a warrior for life after life after life. This is what he was meant to do, to fight evil. And he had no fear, and he was a powerful, powerful general, and he actually had realizations of previous lives where he had fought in this battle and that battle. Quite amazing, actually. So warriors, in previous times, warriors fully were on this level. So when they fought, they were fighting with everything, knowing that if they fought in the proper consciousness, then even if they died, they would not die. The soul would go to a most exalted place due to the depth of their realization, the practical realization that they're not their body. So they would fight and fight and fight until death. Because the realization was so deep that they were souls, that they were eternal souls. Not the body, even though they were in the body, and obviously they have attachment for the body, and obviously when the body gets cut, there's pain. But their realization was so deep in their minds, was so fixed and strong, that the pains that would come would not disturb their realization. But that's what's going to happen to all of us. Death stalks everyone. And pain will be there, generally. And our realization of who we are and who we are not, that we are not this, the vehicle of flesh, the vessel, the soul that gives life to it. It must be very deep, and that will be tested, each and every one of us. So anyways, Archie, the very powerful, realized wife, she entered the fire along with her husband. After observing, text 23, after observing this brave act performed by the chaste wife Archi, the wife of the great King Prithu, many thousands of the wives of the demigods, along with their husbands, offered prayers to the queen, for they were very much satisfied. At that time, the demigods were situated on the top of Mandara Hill, and all their wives began to shower flowers on the funeral pyre and began to talk amongst themselves as follows. The wives of the demigods said, "All glories to Queen Archi. We can see that this queen of the great King Prithu, the emperor of all the kings of the world, has served her husband with mind, speech, and body, exactly as the goddess of fortune serves the supreme personality of Godhead, Yagesha, or Vishnu." So, we know from later on in the Bhagavatam and so many scriptures, so many shastras, that even though the Lakshmi Devi or even Rukmini Devi, even though they have so many assistants who will do their bidding in their service to their husband, the Lord, Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan, they still do the service themselves. Why? Due to their natural affection and respect. And they cherish serving. We saw that, we read that, how when Sudama Brahmana walked into Dwarka and saw Krishna and Rukmini in one of the palaces, Rukmini was personally serving the Lord. Even though she had hundreds and thousands of servants, she personally was doing the taking care of her husband. So similarly, Archie had a similar mood during their life in the palace and even in the forest, that she would serve. In the palace she had so many assistants and maidservants, but still she would do the service herself, because this was the greatest pleasure due to her love. So the demigoddesses, they were praying and appreciating her, how she served fully. Prabhupada uses the opportunity at the end of this purport. That's a very strong statement. We should understand the necessity for maintaining family life in human society, and should thus abolish this artificial law known as divorce. The husband and wife should live in Krishna consciousness and follow in the footsteps of Lakshmi Narayan or Krishna Rukmini. In this way, peace and harmony can be possible within this world. It's not that allowing divorce has made people happier or more peaceful. It hasn't worked. Everyone is unconscious. The whole civilization is unconscious. It doesn't work. There's problems, and then the solutions that we create out of our own fertile imagination to solve the problems end up causing more problems, exacerbating the problem, making it worse. So Prabhupada takes a firm stand. No divorce, the artificial law known as divorce. Abolish it. Very strong. The wives of the demigods continued, "Just see how this chaste lady, Archie, by dint of her inconceivable pious activities, is still following her husband upward as far as we could see." Here's, we'll read from about a third of the way down in Prabhupada's purport. When Prithu Maharaj and his wife Archie abandoned their material bodies in the material fire, they immediately developed their spiritual bodies and entered into spiritual airplanes which could penetrate the material elements and reach the spiritual sky. Since they were carried by two separate airplanes, it may be concluded that even after being burned in the funeral pyre, they remained separate individual persons. In other words, they never lost their identity or became void, or as imagined by the impersonalists, because some people fabricate the spiritual truth that when one becomes realized or when one dies, then we become one. That the individuality that we have right now is just a product of our material situation, but actually individuality is eternal. Spiritual individuality is there, and our material individuality is based on that, on the spiritual individuality. So Prabhupada is making the point that when they died, the body died, Prithu Maharaj first and then Archie later, they assumed their material bodies were burning, and the demigoddesses were seeing on one level the bodies were burning, and on another level their spiritual selves, these spiritual personalities, were proceeding towards the spiritual world and eternal bodies. So each of us have siddhadeyas, or perfected spiritual bodies, as this is our true nature. It is now in seed, and it develops as one becomes spiritually advanced. course. This is how this is all possible, Prabhupada continues. So they actually saw the spiritual results that they were achieving. We would only see the bodies burning, but they saw the spiritual results due to their exaltedness. Prithu Maharaj was a pure devotee, and his wife, Queen Archie, simply followed her husband. Thus, they can both be considered pure devotees, and thus they are capable of performing inconceivable activities. Such activities are not possible for ordinary men. Indeed, ordinary men cannot even take to the devotional service of the Lord, nor can ordinary women maintain such vows of chastity and follow their husband in all respects. A woman does not need to attain high qualifications, but if she simply follows in the footsteps of her husband, who must be a devotee, then both husband and wife attain liberation and are promoted to the Vaikuntha Lokas. Text 27. In this material world, they continued their prayers, every human being has a short span of life. So this is really the essence of this and the next prayers are the essence of what they wish to say. Every human being in this world has a short duration of life, short span of life. When one is young, one scarcely thinks that tomorrow will ever come if they're looking forward to something. But when then one is older and one looks back, one sees that one's life has passed as if in a dream or a moment. So every human being has a short span of life. But those who are engaged in devotional service go back home, back to Godhead, for they are actually on the path of liberation. For such persons, there is nothing which is not available. In the next verse. Any person, so this is the point being that this is the purpose of human life. Dhaman Bhagavatani Ha Dulabham Manusha Janma. This human life is so rare. Out of all the living entities in this world, how many living entities or how many living creatures in the insect form, the bird form, the beasts, the microbes? Practically speaking, there's unlimited living entities, unlimited, billions and quadrillions and trillions and thousands and billions and more and more and more, unlimited, practically speaking. And how many human beings are there? So human life is such an opportunity to realize what we hear here. So any person, text 28, and this is a statement against our missing the opportunities that human life affords, because there's such a tendency to just get involved in activities that are meant for petty pleasures that come and they go and leave us more frustrated. How many attempts will it take us to learn that there's no use following the dictations of the flickering mind which is ordering us to enjoy this and long for that and lust for this? So they're condemning those who are following that path in a hedonistic way. So any person who engages himself within this material world in performing activities that necessitate great struggle, and who after obtaining a human form of life, which is a chance to attain liberation from miseries, undertakes the difficult task of fruit of activities, petty material activities, working so hard to get something that's so temporary, while on the other hand neglecting, not using his time to gain eternal realizations and eternal benefit, such a person, they say, must be considered to be cheated and envious of his own self. So this is not a suitable goal for materialistic persons. You can buy 500 self-management books on goal setting, but no one dares practically speaking, no one dares to tell us what is a proper goal and what is not a proper goal. So if we achieve our goals, but they're improper goals, what is the use of our achievement, of our prioritizing, etc.? No, the goals must also be suitable. So the point here is that what is the suitable goal and what is an unsuitable goal? A suitable goal in life has eternal value. And a non-suitable goal is flickering, material, temporary. So we have those temporary material desires. We can't just say from now on I'm going to not desire this or that. But they should be performed. Our material desires should be satisfied in such a way that by the end of our life, at least by the end of our life, our priorities are in the right order. The eternal is powerful. The eternal needs for the soul, the eternal attractions are flourishing, and the material desires have been subdued. And if not, if we just think that human life, our life is meant to enjoy, 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 and we act in that way, then such a person must be considered to be cheated. Cheated by who? Cheated by himself. And envious of his own self. So one should use one's life to go to the spiritual world. That is the point. Text 29. The great sage Maitreya, who was narrating this to Vidura, continued speaking. My dear Vidura, when the wives of the denizens of heaven were thus talking amongst themselves, Queen Archie reached the planet where her husband, Prithumaraj, the topmost self-realized soul, had attained. So she went to the place of her husband. We'll read the second paragraph of Prabhupada's purport and then one more verse. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, also a husband and wife can turn the home into a place as good as Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, even while in this material world. Being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, even in this world, husband and wife can live in the spiritual world simply by installing the deity of the Lord within the home and serving the deity according to the directions of the Shastra. In this way, they will never feel the sex urge. That is the test of advancement in devotional service. One who is advanced in devotional service is never attracted by sex life. And as soon as one becomes detached from sex life and proportionately attached to the service of the Lord, he actually experiences living in the Vaikuntha planets. In the ultimate issue, there is actually no material world. For when one forgets the service of the Lord and engages himself in the service of his senses, he is said to be living in the material world. And this is based on the mind. Vishwa sukham, vishwa purna sukhayate, that the material world actually becomes perfect and full of happiness if we give up the mentality that the material world is meant for our pleasure and for us to exploit. And rather we adopt the mentality that the spiritual world, the material world, it is all composed of Krishna's energy and it should be used in Krishna's service. Text 30. So Archie, Rich, and Prithumaraj went back to God in the spiritual world. Maitreya continued, the greatest of all devotees, Maharaj Prithu, was very powerful and his character was liberal, magnificent, and magnanimous. Thus I have described him to you as far as possible. So tomorrow we'll finish, if Krishna allows, we'll finish this chapter 31 through 39, which tells the Shruti Phal, or the fruit that comes from hearing about Prithu Maharaj. And it's wonderful. So I think the pastimes of Preetamaraj began possibly in the 19th or 18th chapter of the fourth canto, and now we've just finishing those, the glory of hearing about Preetamaraj in 23. And then possibly tomorrow also we're moving towards the end of this canto, and we'll hear about the Pachetas. We'll start hearing about them. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. It's already 8, so there's really no time for questions. Thank you very much. You all listened very attentively. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.